This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey up, everybody. My name's Joshua Morrison, director of Johnny Mozza's Lessons in Confidence. Today, I want to talk a little bit about making art for the sake of other artists and how that's not really the ideal. It's not really what you set out to do. Nobody sets out to make a bit of art just for other artists to go, ooh, isn't that quite interesting, right? So you have a few different layers of appreciation of art. You've got your basic, you know, watching Come Dine With Me on the telly, and you sat there and you're commenting on it and you're going, oh, look at that meal, that's terrible, that, right? And you got that, that's a nice little thing. I'm not having a go at the simple stuff. I love the simple stuff. I mean, I like sitcoms and all that kind of stuff and just like YouTube garbage. I like all of that, right? And I enjoy sitting down, commenting on something that's not particularly challenging and stimulating, right? Then you have sort of the mid sort of tier, which is, you know, you're engaging your brain a little bit, right? And you feel like you're engaging with some kind of like intellectual kind of thing. And it feels like that, but it's a little bit sort of accessible. It's easy to get into. This would be something like watching like Inception, right? You feel like you're really clever watching Inception because you're like, ooh, aren't they complicated with all their, you know, dreams and stuff? And it is interesting, all of that. I do get a kick out of that. And when I say tiers for this, by the way, it's not to denigrate the simplistic stuff or to try and put the complicated stuff on a pedestal, right? Complicatedness or simpleness can be a good or a bad thing depending on whatever. Some songs are too complicated, some movies are too complicated, some movies are too simple, some are just the right level and they're very simple, some are just the right level and they're very complicated, right? And then you've got the top tier, which is I would call it sort of, how would I put it? So when I used to make stuff, right, I used to make a lot of YouTube kind of stuff, like video essays and that kind of thing, right? And as time went on, I realized what was going on is that people in the comments were all like other YouTubers, right? They all wanted to do the same kind of thing. They were doing video essays and they were doing them in their own little style about their own little interests, right? And I'm doing my little video essays and my little style about my little interests, right? And what I found to be a bit irritating is that I'm making all this stuff just for other people to basically like take notes for the sake of making their own stuff. Now, I do like the fact that other creators watch the things that I do and the idea that, you know, you can inspire someone to create their own thing, right? But I don't think that should be the sole goal of a bit of art, you know? Say you're making a movie, right? And the movie is a very personal tragedy that's really deep and connects to you, and it's about something that was really significant in your life, right? And then you make it, you pour your heart and soul into it for like 3 years, and then it comes out, right? And the only people that watch it are people that seek to review it, or people that seek to make their own film, and they go, oh, how did he do it, right? Or you've got, I don't know, other sort of like critique kind of people. You can kind of lump that in with the reviewers, right? So yeah, sure, they're reviewing it, but when someone reviews a thing and they're watching it, Yeah, they are engaging their brain and they are doing the simplistic level of commenting, but they're not quite doing that mid-tier thing of actually sitting down and like forcefully engaging themselves with it because they're in review mode. Even if they say that they're not in review mode, they kind of are in review mode. They're sitting there going, how can I, what is the plot doing here? What's the character doing here? And obviously some of that is just interpretive, you know, the essence of media and trying to interpret stories and fiction and stuff into something that's legible in our own little mind's eye, right? And that's all well and good. But I don't know, you kind of want people to, you want someone to engage with your thing just for the sake of it. At least a few people to just engage with it for the sake of it, rather than creating stuff just for other creators to look at and take notes and or to review so that they can make their own little bit of content out of it, so they can make their review and publish that or make their own little YouTube review or whatever, right? You want people to engage with you who aren't necessarily creatives. I'm not, by the way, when I'm saying this, I don't mean it as exclusive. You don't want creatives watching your stuff. Of course you do. I love the fact that creatives watch my stuff and that I get so much joy out of seeing people that do like this kind of thing, like these long stream of consciousness, one take kind of things out and about. I love seeing people doing that. And I'm so happy that like people are getting inspired to do that kind of thing, right? But if that was all that people were doing, right? People were just watching my videos and then just going off and making their own, and there was no one just enjoying them for the sake of them, then I'd be sick of doing them and I wouldn't really want to do them, because all I'm doing at that point is just engaging a load of people that aren't really engaged. They're just looking at notes on how to do it themselves, right? And I want people to take notes from stuff, and I take notes from all sorts of things and figure out how I can apply it to, like, if I see something I like, I figure out kind of what they're doing and how I can apply it in my own little way and all that kind of stuff. And that's all well and good, and I'm glad that we can have that. But at the same time, I just feel like it's difficult to sort of say, because I feel like I'm coming off quite cynical. I sort of feel like I'm sort of saying I don't want creators watching my stuff. I do. I love the fact that creators are watching stuff like this and they're taking inspiration and they're taking notes and they're applying those notes to their own future, right? For their future purposes. That's all well and good. But at the same time, you want people that are just like normal people, that aren't creators, that aren't artists, that aren't video content creators, right? You want a lot of those, the majority of people watching your stuff to be those kind of people, because they're going to be the ones that are doing that lower tier of, you know, just sitting there and commenting on it, or just sitting and watching it and vaguely engaging with something that's like, these videos aren't particularly challenging. They're something that you can just chuck on while you're at the gym, or like while you're going to bed, or while you're cooking or doing the washing up or whatever. This isn't like high art that you sit down and analyze and go, ooh, I wonder what he's doing with that. Ooh, I wonder what he's saying there, you know? That's not what this is all about. This is just, you know, the stream of consciousness, getting my own thoughts out there, seeing what can be done with those thoughts and applying them, and then doing more videos, taking the lessons I learned from previous ones and applying them to the next videos, and just doing that ad infinitum, essentially. And I like doing that, and it's really fun to see that people are getting something out of this. And I mean that on more of a level than just taking inspiration for their own bit of content, right? Because when I was making those video essays and it was just people, like the only people that were watching them were people that wanted to go out and make their own video essays and stuff, I felt like I wasn't creating for any worth. I felt like I wasn't creating for anyone to enjoy. I felt like I was creating like GCSE textbooks for people to study. So, like, and no one likes reading a GCSE textbook, and that's what I was doing. That's what I was writing, basically. Because the only people that were engaging with the stuff that I were making were people that wanted to make the same thing as me. And they were looking at what I was doing, going, ooh, I wonder what he's done there. Oh, yeah, I'm going to try and do something like that, you know? And I'm not like someone that'd be like, ooh, they ripped me off or whatever. Like, you can rip this off, I don't care. Like, I'm not the first person who thought of talking to a camera. Oh, yeah, loads of people have done that. People do that all the time. Like, people do them in little studios, they do them in the bedroom, they do them like out in the street, all sorts of places, right? And it's good. I like the fact that people are out there doing this. It's so, you know, rewarding, the fact that people are engaging with what I do, right? And then I like the fact that some are watching these and then going off and making their own thing out of it. There's a few channels that I don't have a list to remember them, right? But there's people like all across the world. I remember there's a guy in Japan called Tantris Humble. There's a guy that's up north, I can't remember his name, and there's a guy in America who's doing them. And then there's a few others that do them like from inside a bedroom and stuff, but it's still the same kind of stream of consciousness thing. And I like the fact that people are watching and getting that little bit of engagement. But at the same time, when you're making stuff, you want your target audience to not be other creators, because there's not many creators out there, you know? We're probably like 1% of the total population. Not many people have made a film, not many people have written a book, not many people have like composed an album, okay? You're unique in that sense. If you are one of those people and you're watching this and you're taking little notes on like, oh, I wonder what he's doing there. I'm going to try and do some of that, right? You're very unique in that regard, and you should be grateful for your creative mind always. And when you do make something that resonates with people, because that's the key. I think it's the fact that when you're getting people that aren't other creatives, those people are more able to resonate with stuff. It's hard for me to resonate with things because I'm constantly in work creating mode, trying to make my own little thing and seeing what they're doing and going, oh, I like that. Even when I'm listening to music, I was listening to music on the way here and I heard a drum fill and I was like, oh, that's a really good drum fill. I want to use something like that. And it's like, why can't I just appreciate the drum fill for what it is? It's a really good drum fill. Why can't I just listen to it and go, oh, that was good? I have to sit there and go, how can I do it in my own way, right? Just let the drum fill be. Just let the little things be. You don't always have to be seeking out the next bit of inspiration. Inspiration will come to you. You don't have to go to it, okay? That's essentially the core of this video, is that inspiration will come to you. You don't need to go to it. I'm going to reiterate that. Inspiration will come to you. You don't need to go to it, okay? And when you do start creating things and you know, acquiring an audience, I feel like you'll be more, since now I've had both, I've had just other creators watching my stuff for the sake of like seeing what I do and that kind of thing, and like giving like the positive responses because they're friends and stuff like that, you know, oh yeah, really good work, man. And it's like, I know you didn't watch all of it. I know you kind of skipped through to get a general idea of what's going on so that you can leave, because you feel like you're supposed to leave a comment to show support and that kind of thing. Whereas if you're just a normal person commenting on a thing, it's because it resonated with you and not because you feel like you owe that person a little thanks because they thank you on your videos or whatever, you know? You can just make stuff and people can engage with it, and that's nice and simple. And again, just to reiterate, I don't want to come across as if I don't want creators watching my stuff. I love the fact that creators watch this stuff and get something out of it and, you know, take the lessons and stuff that I sort of figure out in these videos and apply them in their own little ways. And they do these kind of videos with their own spin on them, you know. I love all that. It's amazing, and it's so gratifying seeing the people do that. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I just wanted to get that across, the idea of making art for other artists. Like, it's not the ultimate goal, I think. I don't think that's the ultimate goal. I think the ultimate goal is making art just for normal, everyday, bog-standard people and not other creatives who are like not the 1% in terms of like, you know, they're super, well, they are quite unique because most people don't go out making films and albums and stuff. Most people generally have like an idea for something in their head, but not everyone goes and does it, you know? Everyone has that idea for a novel, but how many people have actually written that novel? Yeah, some people have, some people haven't. Some people surprise you. Yeah, that's about it from me. Please leave your comments below. Are you a fellow creator? Do you watch these videos sort of thinking, oh, I wonder what he's done there. I'm gonna try and do a little bit of that. Do you understand what I'm talking about when it comes to watching stuff just for the sake of like interpolating it for your own work, compared to just sitting down and actually being able to enjoy something, which I feel like is easier to do when you're not creative? And yeah, leave your comments about that and about this video in general. Do you think this is a load of pretentious shite? If you do, leave your comments about that. We welcome all voices, I suppose. And yeah, take care, everybody. Bye bye.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey up, everybody. My name's Joshua Morrison, director of Johnny Mozza's Lessons in Confidence. Today, I want to talk to you a little bit about the imperfections within filmmaking and how you can often worry far too much about the imperfections that go on. So one of my favorite TV shows out there in the history of television is Fawlty Towers, right? And it's a sitcom, two series, right? And I've watched it so many times, to the point now where when I watch it, I'm spotting new little imperfections all the time. I'm spotting the shadow of the boom pole. I'm spotting the little shake of the tripod. I'm noticing that the set is really like flimsy. If someone hits a wall, the whole wall shakes. I'm noticing little things like that, right? And it's and I got me thinking. When I first watched this, I still saw all of that. I still interpreted all of those little imperfections. And yet it didn't get in the way of my enjoyment of the show. It didn't stop me from enjoying it. And so many of your favorite films, so many of your favorite TV series have these little technical flaws. Some of the best mixed albums out there have that background hiss if you listen with good enough headphones. So many of your favorite films have a few scenes of bad audio. The film that I want to make a point about is Dark City. It came out in 1998, and it's a whole sci-fi thing, kind of cyberpunk. And one of the things that happens in it is a nightclub scene. And what I noticed about this nightclub scene, the first time I watched it, right, was just how bad the audio was. It was fucking atrocious. It was terrible, this audio, honest to God. It genuinely sounded like student film level of awful. Like hiss and like audio cuts from cut to cut. It was really bad. And it got me thinking, how did they even allow that to get past? Do you know why they allowed it to get past? Because the scene's really good. Because the film as a whole needs that scene. And nobody, from what I've seen of criticism of Dark City, has ever noticed this one scene, has ever commented on the scene, how it took them out of the film. One thing that I do with my films is, you see the lav mic here, right? I tend to just keep the lav mic on quite visibly and all that kind of stuff. The reason that I do that all the time is for one very simple reason. I'd rather have good audio and have the audio source visible on the screen than risk having bad audio and hide it underneath here. Do you want to be listening to that all day? Because I certainly don't, right? I don't want to risk that. So I would rather just have it out here, okay? And if it takes you out of the film, it takes you out of the thing, then it takes you out of the thing. The reason it took you out of the thing was because you weren't enjoying it anyway. You didn't want to be watching this thing. You were kind of stuck watching it. Maybe someone put it on, you weren't really enjoying it. Or maybe you just chucked it on, you weren't really enjoying it. And once you sort of see that thing that takes you out of it and is like that one thing that's like, right, I'm not enjoying this, and that was the thing that pushed me over the edge. You weren't enjoying it anyway, so don't worry so much about it. And if people aren't going to enjoy your thing, don't worry about little technical imperfections like that. Obviously, try and make sure you have good sound, audible audio, and like decent visuals and stuff like that. I'm not saying just like put no effort in. Certainly put effort in, but don't worry so much about this stuff, because if someone turns it off because of a little camera wobble or a little bit of an audio clip or whatever, they're not enjoying your thing anyway, and they were looking for an excuse to turn it off. And if it weren't that, then it would have been the next scene that they turned it off, right? They just didn't give a shit, and that's fine. It's okay for certain people to not care about the thing that you want, because you're not making films, you're not making music, you're not making entertainment to appease everybody. You're making it for the sake of fulfilling your creative vision. And if people like that creative vision, then they can get on board, no matter what the imperfections are. Because the imperfections are part of the personality of the thing. I watch so many little documentaries and stuff that have like scenes and bits of audio that are kind of crap, that you need it to be kind of crap because it's like undercover or whatever. And that's kind of part of what's going on. You know, they have like a little body cam and they're going to meet someone. Like, I'm not expecting that to be like this big cinematic thing, because if it were, then it would kind of take me out of it and it would make me think that it's fake, right? So you don't need to have the best technical thing. Sometimes having the best technical prowess isn't the ideal. Sometimes having something that's a bit more lo-fi, a little bit more gritty and down to earth and low budget is actually more beneficial to the project than having something that's like massive and big with like loads of boom audio and you know, set design and all that kind of stuff. You don't always need that. Sometimes you do, but not always. And if you can make stuff with the limitations that you have towards the budgets that you're capable of providing, then you will be making better content, more suitable content for the audiences that you're trying to approach, and they'll be more creatively fulfilling because it will feel like you rather than feeling like you trying to copy your inspirations and that kind of thing. So that's basically the core of the video. So thank you so much for watching this one. If you've noticed that this one was a little bit shaky, that was kind of the point of it. I'm not saying that you're shaking it at all. You're actually incredibly fucking stable with it. Like, holy, you're like a chicken with, like, you know how the chicken has the head? And, like, they hold a chicken. They say that a chicken is the ultimate gimbal because the head never moves. It's kind of like that. But if you noticed a single wobble, right, did it take you out of it? No, because you enjoy this content anyway. So thank you for enjoying this content. Thank you for enjoying the things that I do. Thank you for being a part of this. I love you all. Please leave your comments below about your thoughts on this topic. Do you think that I'm completely wrong? If so, please tell me why. Do you think I'm completely right? If so, well, you don't need to tell me why, because it's evident from the video. So that's basically it. Thank you very much for watching, and I'll see you in a couple of days in the next video. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye. Hey up, everybody. My name's Joshua Morrison, director of Johnny Mozzles, or Lessons in Confidence. Today, I want to talk to you a little bit about some of the happiest moments in my life. I'm going to just recount some of the best times that I've ever had. I'm going to start from the earliest ones I can think of and lead right up to the most recent one. So I think the first one would be I was about 9 or 10, and my parents used to take me to like these barbecues that one of their friends held, right? And when you're a kid and you're going to an adult barbecue, all the kids get put in one room and just to be let them entertain themselves while the adults go and have fun, right? So we're in there. I remember watching Return of the King, right? It was on Sky TV or something like that, right, with adverts and stuff. And I think I remember watching the spider fight and just really falling in love with the Lord of the Rings films at that point, just from seeing that. And after that, I went and watched the whole thing, and it was just really, really, it's a really good film series, you know? Like, I think everyone can agree with that. And later on in that night, it got to like 2 in the morning. I think it was for Bonfire Night or something like that. It was November the 5th. After that, all the adults took these fireworks down to the bottom of this really big garden that they had, and they let me light one of the fireworks. Oh, that was so much fun. I really enjoyed that. And it got to like 3 in the morning, and you know, when you're 9, staying up until 3 in the morning is like the coolest thing ever. You know, you can't beat that. And so I really quite well remember that. We went a few times. We probably went to like 5 or 6 of these barbecues, but that's the one that sticks out in my memory the most. And then, you know, going through high school, what I liked to do, I did have friends, but I didn't like to hang out with them particularly. I preferred to go to the library during the, you know, the break and lunch period. And I would sit on one of the library computers and I would just write this story. I had this idea for a story called Terry Terrible. It was a complete ripoff of Horrid Henry, right? And the way that the story kind of played out was... there was this, like, basically evil school that was like a Nazi school, essentially. It wasn't like Nazi ideology, but it was just like, it was so strict. It was like the strictest place ever. And if you took a step out of line, they basically like beat you into the ground, right? And this kid, Terry Terrible, gets sent there, right? And it's this whole long thing of him just getting there and having to escape. And I wrote about 200 pages of that. And I remember just really enjoying, you know, lunch period starts, I go and get my food, I eat that as quick as possible, and then I sprint to the library and I sit down at the computer. I had the same computer each time, made sure that was the one because that was the one that had my story on it. And I would get it up and I would just write, and I'd try and write like 10 pages a day. And I got about 200 pages of it done, and it got to the summer holidays and I was thinking, right, first month when I get back, I'll have this finished and it'll be 300 pages and it'll be done, right? And it's a little bit of a sad one, actually, because I came back from the summer holidays and I went back on the computer, and it turns out that they wipe all the computers during the summer holidays. So I was a bit pissed off, to be honest. But that aside, that little bit of negativity aside, just going in and writing all the time, every day, it was so wonderful. And I think that's probably what kind of sparked me to be creative going forwards. And since then, I've constantly been writing, drawing, that kind of thing. Right after that, whenever I would get home, I would go on my little laptop that I got when I was about 13, and I start crafting this world, right, which I will do a video about. But crafting this world was so much fun. It was so wonderful just making up these like alien races and like seeing like the little politics that plays out between them. And it was kind of a rip off of Mass Effect and a bit of a rip off of The Elder Scrolls. And there's one bit where it rips off Fallout and it rips off some of my favorite games and movies and stuff like that. You know, it wasn't wholly original or anything like that, but it was so much fun to just get back and just start thinking about things that could be happening and the stories that could play out in this world. And I basically lived in this world for like a year, making up my own characters, making up my own events, making my own stories and that kind of thing. And I remember really vividly, there was this one time that I kept trying to write this little short story, and I was kind of struggling to write the short story. I could never get more than a couple pages in because I kept rewriting the first couple pages, right? And every time, because in this bit, these first couple pages, like this character is walking down this road and it's really rainy out, right? And I'm describing the scenery and the landscape and that kind of thing, and the fact it's so rainy and the environment, right? And this character within it. And every time I would start explaining like the rain and how to, like, you know, drowning him down and like all that kind of stuff, it would start raining. It would piss down the rain really, really thoroughly, like way more than this. Every time, I wrote it like five different times over the course of a month trying to get this thing down. And I couldn't get it down, but every time I did write it, I had a little hot chocolate that I was just drinking from the hot chocolate, right? I had a little packet of crisps, right? And it would just start raining and it was so nice. It was really just calming. You know those little YouTube videos that like, you know, 8 hours of a fireplace to go to sleep to, that kind of thing. Or like 8 hours of like calming beach sounds to go to sleep to. It was that kind of thing, but for real life. It was really quite nice and quaint and just pleasant. So that was those are some earlier sort of memories. And then those are quite indoorsy sort of isolated sort of ones. So let's go to another one, which takes place around here actually. This is Warren Farm. This is a place that I've been coming to for a long, long time, that I first came to when I was 13. I've told that story in particular, but there was one time that we came here, we went to a house party, right, and it got to like 2 a.m, and the friend that whose house I was at, they lived just down the road from here, and I sort of said, should we go to Warren Farm, and it was 1 a.m, we were all a little bit drunk, and I said, let's go to Warren Farm, we all kitted up, and we came down to Warren Farm in the middle of the night with our little flashlights and stuff, scouting out the place, and it was all a little bit freaky, because it's late at night, and you know, it's a miserable sort of looking area, and it, you know, it was a bit intense, you know, and we went into that building that you can see just in the background, right, we went in there, and it's like this indoor sort of gymnasium, right, and we just wandered around there, and it was the first time actually being able to get inside there, right. And we just like kicked the buckets around and just like threw shit around and just like had a laugh. And I remember laughing more than I'd ever laughed in my life up until that point. I remember like full on like fits of wheezing laughter on the ground, right? And I don't remember what I was laughing at in particular, but I just remember that moment. And then I remember it was the middle of summer, so we stayed here until about 3:30, and the sun started to rise, and we were sitting up there, right? And we were all having a bit of a smoke and just like had our last couple of cans of the night and stuff. And the sun started to rise. And I remember looking at the morning dew that started to waft over the landscape. And I remember seeing the sun being so vividly bright and orange. And it was dipping its way up over the horizon, and the clouds were shimmering, and everything just looked perfect, and the sky was this wonderful shade of violet. And I remember thinking, like, this is something else. This is something that I'm going to remember for the rest of my life. And it was well and truly brilliant. That was probably in like 2018, 2019, something like that. In 2019, a memory that I really remember quite well, actually, was I was with some mates, and we were in Portobello Road, and we were sat at a cafe, right? And there was this big thing going on the other side of the road, loads of people meeting up and, like, talking and stuff like that, and there seemed to be some jazz music playing from inside this building, and more people, they were all coming out of the building, and they were all surrounding this building. And I was really curious as to what was going on. And I sort of said to my friends, like, do you know what's going on over there? And they didn't have a clue. So I said to one of my friends, can you roll me a cigarette? And so he rolls me a cigarette, right? And then he gives it to me. And then he goes to give me a lighter. And I said, no, don't give me a lighter. So I go up to, I get up and I take the cigarette over to the crowd, right? And I'm just wandering around and I find someone to ask for a lighter. And now that I've done that and I've asked for the lighter, there's a bit of a conversation that can begin. So I kind of ask, what's going on here? And it turns out it was a book launch. And there was this kid that, he's a semi-famous kid actually. And I can't remember his name, but he'd written this poetry book. And it was quite a good poetry book. I got to read a little couple bits of it, and I had a quick chat with him and some of his family. All his friends and family and like various professionals that he knew were all there. And there was a big jazz band inside with saxophones and stuff. And it was lovely. And now that we're all in, right, I brought my friends into the building, right? And there was all this free booze. So much. There was just wine bottles as far as the eye could see. And so I picked one up and I was like, oh, how much? And they said, oh, just go for it, mate. And I was like, I can just go for it. So we sat in there, listening to this jazz music, chilling out, drinking a few bottles of wine, talking to whoever comes up and just like engaging little conversations about poetry and stuff like that. I remember we had one particular good discussion about nihilist sort of poetry. And like, I'm not a nihilist in particular, but it's really interesting to hear from nihilists and hear their sort of take on the world and that kind of thing. And it's a really engaging conversation. There was a lot of engaging intellectual kind of conversations. And we left and we stumbled back a little bit after what was a little bit too much wine, right? And we were just talking to each other and we were like, this sort of thing shouldn't be happening. This sort of thing doesn't normally happen. Like, what was this? This was just the community coming together and we got to go somewhere we don't normally go and be in an environment that we're not normally in. And it was all just through sheer coincidence of just us being there and these people being there. And it was just that one move, that one thing of getting up and talking to someone that allowed us to ingratiate into this little communal gathering for this book launch. And it's a good little book. It's a little book of poetry, and there's some bits where they play with the form and that kind of thing, and it's nice. And that moment was really something that stuck with me. And it's kind of the thing that I like to make a lot of videos about community and how like there's a big community out there, and you just sort of need to engage with it, and then you'll find yourself in weird and interesting places. And that was the first time that I realised that in the flesh. It was just going up to that person, asking for the lighter, and then getting in all these little conversations, and then getting all this free booze and listening to this free jazz music, and it was just wonderful. It was so, so much fun. And then I think fast forward a little bit, because the pandemic happens and there's not much that can really be said about the pandemic. And then in 2021, I started filming my movie, my first feature film, Sheffield Psychedelic, which still not out yet. I'm sorry about that, by the way. It's nearly done, but it's not finished yet. Yes, which I do apologise for, but we did 6 days of filming and it was up north, right? And we were setting things up for so long, me and this guy. We were setting things up for this film for so, so long, stressing out, staying up until like 2 a.m. every night, like drafting up emails for people and sorting out script and sorting out this and sorting out locations and everything, right? So many things that go into a film. And we decided that we had 6 days in a row to complete this film. It's a feature film. 6 days of shooting is not very much. If you know anything about making films, they normally take like 20, 30 days, right? So we're kind of taking the piss a little bit. And we did day one, and we did day two, and we did day three, and like, I did these videos where I kind of just talked about the day that we had and that kind of thing, which will be in a big making of documentary at some point that I'll make, which I haven't even started making yet. But I noticed in these videos that I'm so tired. The bags under my eyes are huge. They're like full Waitrose shopping bags, full of shopping. That's what they're like, these bags under my eyes, right? And I remember the last day of filming, we went into the Peak District to do the climax of the film, and there'd been a few dropouts, and the whole thing in the climax was there was going to be the show-off showdown with the mafia sort of thing, right? And we had all these different people that needed to come in with cars and stuff, and there was going to be a tiny little chase sequence and that kind of thing. And people were dropping out, and it looked like we weren't going to be able to do that. And this was the last day of filming, and I remember being in the car. I remember arranging it so that I was in the car with the three actors. And I remember saying distinctly, I want a climax to my fucking movie. I'm not going home without a third act, right? And so I started quite manically refiguring out the entire nature of the climax. And I found a new way of writing this climax that we could do with the resources that we had. And I was quite desperately calling up the other members of the crew to tell them the plan, and then when they get there, that we need to get right into it because we're fighting the sunset and all that sort of stuff. And then it started snowing. It started fucking snowing for this thing, which was just kind of perfect because it looks so good on camera, right? And I remember when we got up the hill, we went up this big hill, and the wind was blowing through our hair, but it didn't matter because we had some of the best sound guys in the universe. We were filming these crazy sequences of like running around and like fighting and stuff. And I remember when we rapped, I remember just feeling this insane sense of satisfaction. We'd fucking done it. We had completed filming of this thing that seemed so impossible, where so many things could have gone wrong. Like, I've never been to Sheffield in my life before this point, and suddenly I've made a film there, right? And I remember we were on the drive back, and I remember just like leaning back in the car, just like this. Wow. I was a passenger, by the way. Ah, I've done it. And that feeling really stuck with me. And yeah, that was bliss. And that's what's, you know, that's the invigorating love for filmmaking that I have, that was just brought into the flesh at that point. And I wouldn't say nothing ever beat it, but it was absolutely divine. And let me think of other times that were really good. I think in the past 5 months or so, I've been having a really good time of it lately. Just in general, it's just like life just turned around and just decides, Josh, you've been having a hard time lately. Let me just give you some happiness. And so life gave me some happiness, right? And found the most amazing woman to like, you know, have a relationship with. And a couple of weeks ago, I stayed at her house for a few days, right? And it was a bit of a getaway. And we kind of just... I remember we were sat on the sofa watching some telly. I can't remember what we were watching. But I remember just like sitting there, and I remember thinking, this is fucking heaven. This is brilliant. Nothing could beat this. And yeah, it was a really quiet moment, but it was a real moment of serenity. And then on the last day, I had everything packed up ready to go. And she was in the kitchen doing something or other. And I was in the living room, and I was just looking out the window, right? And they have these little bird feeder things, right? And I was just staring at these little, like, sparrows or hummingbirds, whatever the fuck they were, right? Just, like, going in and just... I don't know what I'm doing. I'm trying to be a bird-eating bird feed, right? But I sat and watched these birds for a good 5 minutes or so, right? Without a thought in my head, nothing was going on up there, right? And I remember realizing that after about 5 minutes, and I thought, wow, I've not been thinking about anything. I'm not talking positive thoughts, negative thoughts, overthinking, nothing. Just absolute serenity, bliss, peace. I felt at peace. And, you know, there's two forms of the best moments of your life. There's the active ones, where there's these huge events that go on that are larger than life, and you're in the midst of it, and they're fun stories to tell to people down the line. And then there's the times where it's not much. You know, it's not like it would make for a great story, sitting and watching those birds or anything. But the feeling that you have is just like something that you can't quite describe, but it's positive, it's beautiful. And I remember sitting there thinking, this is one of the best moments of my life. And it's so simple, just looking out the window. I look out the window all the fucking time, but this time was different. There was something about it that I can't quite put into words. It was almost like a liminal space, but like a nice version of it, like a posital space, right? Just sitting watching this, where I just felt this overwhelming sense of peace and happiness and contentedness. And I don't think anything could quite beat that. Obviously, you can have your crazy active memories, like that time when I finished that film and then we were running around doing crazy things, or like when I went out at like 1 a.m. with my friends, like all drunk going around, like shooting the shit and talking shite and stuff, and those are all fun, positive memories. But, you know, it's nice that we have both, and I think everyone has lots of positive memories. And I'd like to see more people make some videos in this sort of way, just like just recounting their finest tales, the moments where they felt the best, the times when it felt like everything was all right. I'd like to hear some of that from yous, not just in the form of comments, but in response videos. Just make a video like this, go somewhere, or just stay inside, which, you know, I wouldn't blame you because it's fucking pissing it down, right? And just talk about some of the nicest things that have ever happened to you and some of the finest, most positive memories that you've ever had. And those are some of mine. I'll probably do another one of these at some point, talking about more positive memories. I'll write some down. I haven't even bothered writing any down. I should have made a list and then I could have gone through the list. But I'll do that next time. And I'll make another one like this because it's been quite fun. And I'm in a much better mood having made this video compared to where I was before. And it's not even like I was in a bad mood before, but I was, you know, I was just kind of on autopilot. But now I feel genuine, like quite nice and happy. So yeah, thank you very much for watching this video, everybody. Hope you have a good rest of the day. And yeah, I'd love to know what some of the most positive memories are in your life. Thank you very much for watching and take care, everybody. Bye-bye. Hey up, everybody. My name's Joshua Morrison, director of Johnny Mozzles, our lessons in confidence today. I want to talk a little bit about an instrument that I recently acquired as a Valentine's Day present. So thank you very much to the person that gave me this, who knows exactly who they are. So this is a stylophone beat portable drum machine, right? It's brilliant, this. Watch. So I'm going to turn it on. So let me just sort of half sit on it so I don't lose it in the wind. So it kind of looks like that, right? And you mess around with this, right? It's got a little stylus. I'm gonna have to turn it up quite a lot. So I love this thing, right? It's so cool. There's bass and there's drums, right? And the idea is that you can make your own little beats with it. So I've been trying to figure it out. It's very difficult to actually figure this thing out. So let's start off with doing some drums. You kind of flick between drums and bass with this, and then you flick between sounds with this, right? So let's start off with a bit of drum noises, right? So that's that. Hang on, where's kick? Where's kick? Brilliant. So I love this. It's so cool. I'm trying to figure out how I can make use of it in a song. And I'm thinking it would be quite good to do like a little challenge. Like I did a challenge of trying to make an album in a day. Try and make an album with this. I like that. Oh, and there's also, I'm using the rock setting right now. Let's try techno. I'm not much of a techno guy, so I don't know. It's brilliant, isn't it? You can just do all sorts of stuff with it. So that's the drums, right? Now let's go to bass, and I'll tell you a little bit about the bass. I'm gonna switch to hip. I think it's short for hip hop. It's my favorite one. And also, it kind of does this, I don't know what kind of music Stormzy makes, right? But it kind of sounds like Stormzy. Imagine just doing some spitting. I'm just spitting some bars over this, right? And then up, and then back down a little bit. And then, ooh, in the middle. And then way down here. And then I can, if you circle it around, it goes up and down octaves, so. And I like the smoothness of going up and down. It's really cool. And you can kind of do this like little sort of tremolo-y, vibratory sort of thing. It's better that way. And now let's do some fucking microtonal stuff. It's brilliant, isn't it? Like, I know that this whole video is a load of arse and it's just me going, duh, duh, duh. It's cool, isn't it? Duh, duh, duh. It's brilliant. But you can do different sounds, you can do more of a box. I don't know what box means, I think it's beatbox. If you'd really been looking at the camera, you could have run off of that. It's about trying to control it. I'm struggling to control it, but there's a song that I'm doing for the new album called Lost Little Lizard, and it kind of goes. Last little lizard, last little lizard, I'm a last little lizard. Reptiles have no sat nav. Last little lizard, last little lizard, I'm a last little lizard. Reptiles have no sat nav. Last little lizard, I'm a last little lizard. Reptiles have no sat nav. You just have so much fun with it. It's so brilliant. And then the thing that I really wanted to show you is it's got this record feature. So I'm going to start off doing some techno drums just so that it can do something. Okay. Okay, we got something there. Let's bring it down to bass. Oh shit, it's because it's still recording. Last little lizard, last little lizard. It's so great, isn't it? It's just looping it, I'm not doing anything. I don't have a clue how to use it, but I couldn't even get to do a beat before I started this video. And then you slow it down. See? So I'm gonna try and do another one. I'm gonna turn it off and on again. That's the way I figure out how to do it. So let's go back to techno. Let's go back to drums, right? Because I liked what was happening there. Okay, that'll do. I'm doing the same thing. I'm forgetting to stop the recording, to stop it from doing that. So we're going to do it one more time. And we're going to do it properly. Fucked it up. I'm gonna do it again. I need, give me a click. Click for me, please. Just make some death grips noises with it. Breaking mirrors in the face. in the United States of America. It's, what's this? GABA music now. It's fucking annoying. So, yeah, this is my Valentine's Day present. I love it. I got her a Grateful Dead record. I can't remember. It's the one that came out in 1974. A studio album. It's got an album art that looks a bit spacey. Listened to it today. It was quite good. I say it was quite good. It was really fucking good. It's a Grateful Dead, isn't it? So, yeah, that's just me not being able to sort of, you know, be, what's the word, emotional about stuff. Kind of going, oh my God, isn't that brilliant? You know, I'm not good at that. I'm more like, oh, that's all right, isn't it? Right? This, though, this is fucking sweet. She gave me a melodica as well for Christmas, which thank you as well for that. I'm going to try and make something out of both of those and just have some fun with it, because I think this could be really engaging. It can make something really fun and cool. So, yeah, that's pretty much the entire video. There's not much to this. It's just me showing you this rectangle, bigger rectangle, square beat box thing. Yeah, if you want to buy one of these, I don't know where to send you, because I got it as a present. So if you want one, you're gonna have to find it yourself. Yeah, thank you very much for watching this video. Hope you got something out of it. Hope you decided you might want to get one of these. If you didn't, that's fair enough. It might not be your kind of music. I mean, it wasn't my kind of music, and I'm loving it. Now I've figured out how to make a beat with it, I'm going to be making all sorts of little things with it. Just irritating everyone in my house. So, yeah, that's me, that's you. We're here outside the church, annoying the people in the church. I'm going to do a video about that one day. This has been a bit all over the place, but, you know, that's... What were you expecting? A video about this? Were you expecting some kind of, like, big... like grandiose point about society? Oh, society could be so much better if we all just started using our stylophone beatboxes. Well, it would, wouldn't it, I suppose. So yeah, that's it from me. Thank you very much. Take care, everybody, and bye-bye. I need to put it back in the box. So give me a sec and I'll do that. And I could have cut this, but I haven't, apparently. Or maybe I have, and I just... No, you're not seeing it, but I don't think I have. There we are. It went in properly before. Like, this didn't flap out the side. I don't know what I've done. Oh, well. It came in wrapping paper, but, like, wrapping paper doesn't stick around.